This is Local Views, fourth time in January, '09. It would be hard to tell if anything other than the inauguration is happening in the world this week. The inauguration of a new president is about as close as we get to regal pomp and ceremony in the U.S., but by our proletarian standards, this was no ordinary inauguration. By the numbers alone, it was extraordinary. Rather than standing in the crowd in the cold, anyone could have had a much better look by staying home and watching the tube, but by the millions, they wanted to be there, to experience the feeling of being there, and it didn't matter if there was just a spot in the crowd a mile from the podium. For those lucky enough to be on or around the podium, there was plenty to see, not the least of which was every imaginable political adversary, even those who genuinely hate each other's guts, dressed to kill and mostly making nice with each other for the cameras. There was Dick Cheney, tootling around in a wheelchair. They say he hurt his back doing a little of his own heavy lifting. He's been doing that for the dark side of the Bush gang for 8 years. I guess it finally caught up to him. There must be something in those boxes he doesn't want anyone else to handle. Then there was Ted Kennedy, struggling for every breath behind that broad, pasted-on smile, and finally breaking down over lunch. Another dying political heavyweight, carrying secrets even darker and heavier than Cheney's. For comic relief, there was the Chief Justice flubbing the oath while the new president tried to help him get through it. There was the Reverend Joseph Lowry doing a little octogenarian rap at the end of the benediction. There was Jimmy Carter in the hallway leading to the podium, brushing past Bill Clinton as though he wasn't even there. And, of course, there was Aretha Franklin singing her heart out with an enormous bow pasted on her forehead, filling about half the TV screen. Positively surreal. And finally, there was the bushwhacker, looking a little bemused and alone, but still wearing that familiar smirk, a man who knows that despite all the scorn and ridicule heaped upon him, he's gotten all he wants out of this town, and once again, he won't have to account for the ruin left in his wake. The speech was the heart of the show, of course. President O is the classic silver-tongued orator. He makes it look easy, but anyone who was expecting the skies to open up might have been disappointed. It was a relatively tame, predictable speech, dignified and oratorical, but without any memorable slogans or catchy buzzwords to be repeated by the writers of popular history. He didn't need them. He already expected his listeners to be asking what they could do for their country. He spoke just to say, let's get to work, and to reassure everyone that he's got a hold of the wheel and he's serious. Most everything that happened on Tuesday was symbolic, from the conservative evangelist Rick Warren giving the invocation, thus burying Obama's association with Jeremiah Wright, to Reverend Lowry reminding us that the president still is connected to the African-American version of Christianity. And there were Itzhak Perlman and Yo-Yo Ma reminding us that the president is a superior intellect and an urbane gentleman with a regard for the highest cultural values, even though he tried his best to get down a little bit at one of those 10 inaugural balls he visited in the evening. The symbolism will continue in the early strokes of the presidential pen. Shutting down Gitmo, for example, isn't a burning priority, but it's a powerful signal that things are changing right now. The inauguration established that Obama isn't just the president. He's a phenomenon, and Obamamania has a life of its own. It's too late for anything he does to be business as usual. All indications are that he planned it that way, but he will be the president of hope and change, whether he likes it or not. One quick local note, Jeff Polline is out as the editor of the Grass Valley Union, but don't expect the union to report that fact or anything about it. The only clue is in the agate type on the masthead, where Jeff Ackerman now is identified as the editor/publisher. Come to think of it, both of Polline's predecessors left that job the same secret way. The union's editorial values may be a little narrow and conservative, the quality of the reporting a little thin, and the editor's desk may be a black hole, but in a town this size, we're fortunate to have any sort of daily newspaper at all. That's Local Views for this week. This is Mark Stannert reminding you this commentary may be a little thin for KVMR, its management, staff, and contributors. Email mark@caloki.com.